南無妙法蓮華経。南無妙法蓮華経。
Good morning, everyone. Namo myoho renge kyo. Well, I got up late today. It's not morning. It's just a day. Anyway, I hope this finds you well, healthy, and safe. Glasses, karma. Okay. We're going to get through the first part of chapter 3 today, and that is about the merit or rewards derived from perfect wisdom. And as you know by now, perfect wisdom is coursing in the bodhisattva mind of Buddha-ness, right? So that still involves, at this stage of the teachings, a very conscious effort with our samsaric mind to detach from identification. Identification of what? Certainly, the first word that comes to mind is the self. But everything is identification. That is the samsaric mind. It identifies everything so that it can belong to the world of name and form. Remember the Nidana. And because it has a name and a form, we're attached to it. If we didn't apply name and form, we wouldn't have a mind of distinctions, which is how we develop a sense of self. That sense of self is very much crazy glued to identification of separate things. You know, that archaic meme of oneness in Buddhism is often misunderstood as a collection of one. But the more truth to that statement would be that everything originates from the same source, the same energy, and therefore is not distinct, is not differentiated, is not self, I, mine, yours. It isn't there. If that makes sense. That's where the oneness comes from, not from the conglomeration of everything. Do you see how nonsensical that is? Right? So it's the individuality, the thingness of things that keeps us anxious, stressed, because we're constantly trying to make those things continue to exist. I identified it, therefore it has to stay with me. If it disappears, I lose identification, I don't know what I am. Because I am a reference to everything I perceive. If I don't perceive, then I cease to exist. Bingo! Right? We're chipping away at this thing called Buddha-ness, Buddhahood. Is to have, remember the triangle, to keep all of those other eight consciousnesses, sight, smell, hearing, touch, so on, but to experience them free from the flaw that they incur of identification, specificity, differences, and simply be entertained. It's a word that comes to mind, because when we're entertained, we're only empathizing or sympathizing with things happening rather than being duly engaged. It's not a perfect term by any means, but it's one that comes to my mind all the time. It's kind of like watching a movie. Your suspension of disbelief allows you to, empathetically participate in the movie. But you understand with your mind that it's just an empathetic role that you're playing in the movie. You're not in it. You're not in the car crashes and explosions and romantic scenes and all that. You're just an observer. Yet, here you are, right? So there's a distance there in watching a movie that you choose to creep through or not. If a movie just sucks and you're not engaged in it, then you just see it for what it is. Not people and cars, explosions, just this images, one after another, trying to tell a story that's not all that interesting. So you're not engaged in it. But you can see it. Look at the cameras. Look, that's a 1967 Dodge. How are they sponsoring this film, you know? Right? It's all still going on. You're just not engaged with it. Do you see what I'm saying? If it's a good movie, you can empathize with the story, still knowing that it's a story. It may raise emotions in you, and those are your attachments that are being tickled and enlivened by you, not by the movie. Do you see the different gauges of distance? So Buddhahood is a completely disengaged, although observant, mind. Does that help, that analogy, kind of get you there? And what we're talking about with perfection of wisdom is intellectually, like we just did, how do we analogize and instantiate, therefore, this knowing while in this samsaric experience? And so perfection of wisdom is a long discourse on how might one who, and 2300 years ago, they didn't have movies. They didn't have sequential images, right? Think of how a movie is made. It's one image after another in rapid succession that we, with our minds, blur into animated motion, right? It's all an illusion. It's just made of, you ever done the trick where you draw things on the corner of a page and then you flip through the pages? If you do it with four pages, it's kind of right? Very hitchy. But if you do it on 100 pages, wow, that looks like it's alive. But you know it's a bunch of pages with little still images, right? So this is that transcendence of what we know to be versus what we want to see, what we construct as a reality. Well, the same is true in what Buddhism is trying to illustrate to people who don't have the option of those facilities. That's why this time, this epoch, this era of man means we have a very different evolved capacity to understand how chanting Namo Myoho Renge Kyo can do that and show us clearly each page. And we can instantiate that clarity of knowing about all of life. Right? Think about that. And so before they had all of this capacity and this ability to abstract these kinds of thinking, they were trying to do it with words. So Shakyamuni had to take it step by step, illustrating quote unquote, through people's own minds and realizations of how their minds were working to make a reality of their own. Right? So perfection of wisdom is at some point they developed enough self-awareness in the context of what they see, smell, hear, so on and so forth, as a construct of images that they perceive as real, but they're just these pages. But that sounds awful magical to somebody who doesn't have these other tools of perception, right? So perfection of wisdom is trying to say not only how this works, but how do you live in this way? How do you live through knowing and engage the two so that they function together? This is the work of the Bodhisattva, to not only know about the difference, but to course in the difference. Do you see? So with all that effort, what's the payoff? What do I get out of doing this with my life? To awaken this sense of what's really going on here. What good is it? One who will take up this perfection of wisdom, in other words, this practice of enlightenment, wherein the Savior's course, what I just said, living this way, and constantly study it. What do I always say? Buddhism, as Nietzsche said, as Shakyamuni himself said, is three parts, right? Study, practice, and commit, right? Resolve, determination. Because it takes determination to stay awake to what's going on. This is very easy to slip into the movie, right? Make your own. Fire, poison, sword, and water cannot harm him. The him being the Bodhisattva with a Buddha mind. Because those things are not instantiated, permanent, distinct for that mind. They are the movie you don't like. It's not. I'm not saying you don't like life. I'm saying that disconnection. Follow? And also, Mara finds no entrance nor his host. So we have already, with the chapter 1 and chapter 2, distinguished a duality. The duality is this human existence, which is all about Mara. Mara being the stand-in deity of sorts, universal force, if you will, whatever the rhetoric you choose. It's emblematic of our attachment, our distinctions, our I and other, mine and yours. The duality for the samsaric mind is all about distinctions, right? Identification, that's different, that's different, that's not this, this isn't that, blah, 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 on and on. But in Buddhism, there's another distinction, another duality. There is the samsaric in general reality, and then there is the knowing. The transcending of samsara, while in it, but perceiving it as other. So there's the duality again. Buddhaness, samsara. The two are not separate, but they are two aspects of being. There is the being verb of samsara, and there is the non-I understanding just is of Buddha-ness. Buddhaness doesn't have time. It doesn't have being Buddha is a nonsense term. Because being implies a construction one moment after another. Moment after moment, birth, death, birth, death, birth, death, is a construction of identifying moments. 3,000 realms in each thought moment. See, so you tie all of this together and you see that samsara is by its very construct a construct, constantly constructing itself. Whereas Buddha mind, Buddha-ness, there is no, this is pre-formation, pre-construction. This is the knowing. There's still an ing there. How do I remove that verb? To know. From that this is why Buddha can only exist in samsara. It doesn't go hide someplace. But it is the the pre-formation, the pre-karmic construct of samsara. From that mental place, which is samsara, because there is no other mental, right? The fact that there's a mental, a mind, can only exist because of karma. But one can look upon karma without being sucked into it. Make sense? You could be, think of being a coach. Another loose analogy, but most people become coaches after having experienced exhaustively becoming an athlete, let's say, having a career as an athlete, and then the decay of being an athlete, no longer being able to compete as an athlete, but they have intimate knowledge of what it is to become an athlete, that everything that goes with that, the performance of an athlete, the degradation over time of an athlete, and the retirement of an athlete. They know the whole spectrum. And they become the best coaches because when they talk to the young person aspiring to be an athlete, they know the kind of bridges they need to cross mentally, physically, commitment, time. They know the components that make a competitive athlete because they've experienced it, right? So think of Buddhaness as being this from samsara, understanding and disassembling samsara, and now being able to watch samsara with that distance. You could argue, but the coach is still very much invested in that samsaric process, and you would be right. So Buddhaness is what? The retired coach? Watching other coaches? How much distance do you have before you finally are completely uninvested and yet fully knowledgeable? Are we starting to get to this place that we all can do? Right, this is why the translation uses savior. That's not a Buddhist word. But if you were to use the word save, what would it mean in Buddhism? Well, that we can do. Because life, first noble truth, life is suffering. Life is stress. Life is anxiety. Because the nature of life, the way it's constructed, is full of precipices. This is. Oops, it isn't. Oops, it's falling apart. Oops, it's degrading. I want it to continue being. the whole construct of samsara is pain, because the fallacy of samsara is that we're creating a new me, a new you, a new this, a new that. Get a new one, right? Consumerist society. Got to get a new one. This one's a year old. Can't be any good. Got to get the new one. What are you doing? Does it work? Well, yeah, but the new one, right? Samsara. Constantly making new things. The suffering's built in. Because now I have an old thing. We do that with everything. But disengage, unplug. Wow, this is so much more relaxing. Look at all this stuff. It's crazy. Wow, what did I just do? Saved myself from a lot of anxiety and stress and suffering. Wow, living isn't so painful anymore, right? So I can westernize it just like they did, but understand that that's what we're doing. Whatever way you need to get to this awakening, this enlightenment, do it. It's your path. It's your Buddha wisdom. It's your Gohanzen, your penetrating door into... I don't mean be an irresponsible hippie bum, whatever your vernacular is for that. Apologies to hippies. Right? But it's a process of mind that for us is actually quite easy. We take it for granted. Or we forget it altogether and we keep chasing new. This is new to me. Right? Well, can we polish up Buddhahood and make that new? Moment to moment to moment to moment. Right? Perfection of wisdom. Keep your mind there, not immersed. Like I said, don't be in the rapids bouncing off the rocks. Be on the mountain face looking at the beauty of the rapids and impressed and awed by the difficulty that must be the rapids without having to dive into them just to know suffering. So, have we gotten to the rewards yet? One could say there's rewards in that, but it's difficult to see at this moment, so let's continue. Someone may, for the Sugata, who went to rest, build stupas, made of seven precious things, and worship them, until thousands of kotas of fields are filled with these stupas, of the Sugata countless as the sands of the Ganges. So you could dedicate yourself to honor Buddhiness and go about creating places of worship, which, as you know from previous videos, we don't worship. That's a very Western term, and it's a very samsaric term, because to worship is to endow something else with the power that is your own, right? Why would I think of my perfection of wisdom, my Buddha-ness, my efforts toward Buddha as coming from a rock or a statue or a picture or anything else? Like, please give it to me. Like praying. Those words are completely not Buddhist. So why, if you think you're practicing and learning and making effort morning to night to perfect your wisdom, to perfect your mind of liberation of Buddha, invest so much time in making offerings and worshipful places. Well, go on. And like him, as many beings, again, as there are in endless quotas of fields, they all would do worship without doing anything else, with heavenly flowers and the best perfumes and unguents. Let us reckon for eons in the three periods, and still more than that. But if someone else had copied this book, the mother of the Sugatas, from which come forth the guides with the ten powers, would bear it in mind, revere it with flowers and unguents, an infinitesimal portion of his merit would have those who had given worship to the stupas. So that's a convoluted way of saying that if, instead of running around creating thousands of stupas and places to worship something other, one were to take this teaching, the producer of perfection of wisdom, because this teaching is your way toward learning, teaching yourself that release of Buddha-ness, of being a bodhisattva coursing in the world with the Buddha mind, the perfection of wisdom, the Buddha wisdom. From which come forth the guides with the ten powers. In other words, from this teaching, you develop your own guidance toward your enlightenment, right? And instead of offering all of these unguents and perfumes and so forth to other, you hold them in mind as your rewards, your merit, an infinitesimal portion of this merit would have those who had given worship to the stupas. In other words, all of those other people making those kinds of efforts with stupas and otherness have gained a tiniest fraction of merit compared to you, the one who's taken this teaching personally to develop your own mind of awakening, have gained so much reward, merit. Reward works better because it's a self-instantiated thing. Your transcendence from samsara, your samsara. Far more rewarding as an experience, as a way of being, because you're still in samsara, you're a bodhisattva, then all the efforts those people make, they don't realize how much their efforts are grounded in Mara, grounded in, they've got to make that stupa, they got to make that place, they got to put that rock in the right. Isn't that identification? Isn't that distinguishment? Right? Dissections, ownerships, this is important, more important than me. Kind of went off the rails, didn't you? So it's right here, early on. We studied the Lotus Sutra. It's all built into the Lotus Sutra. It's very much, this is how I become enlightened. This is how I make Buddha-ness happen. Everything prior is, okay, think about this. This is how you're going. This is how life ends. This is how your mind works. This is how your body works. This is how you see the world. You need to destroy that. You need to get beyond this. You need to use all this instruction. We already know. What we need is a focus on our transcendence, on our Buddha-ness. And we need to stay there, right? Put it ahead of the boat. Make all of our other eight consciousnesses work within the boundaries of the transcendent Buddha mind. Then our stress is relieved. Our anxiety goes away. And we can live this life full, free, self-knowing. That's the whole purpose of Buddhism. That's why Siddhartha started this whole search to begin with. Right? It can be easy to forget why we're doing this. Because there are plenty of influences out there in the world who want to tell us that Buddha is an entity we worship. Buddha is something outside of ourselves. Buddha is a religion. Buddha is. But that's not Buddhism at all. That's some kind of samsaric Mara trap, trying to make Buddhism yet another thing we own. Distinguish it as a thing. This is a powerful urge of the samsaric mind. But that is not Buddhism. Buddhism isn't a religion. It's not something we worship. It's not other. Buddhism is a self-knowing, a self-awakening. What does awakening mean to you? Don't you think of yourself waking up in the morning? Wow, look at all this. So apply that to your mind. It's yours. Buddha is a mind awakening. To live your life to its fullest. Why do you live your life to its fullest? You can only do that if you liberate yourself from what keeps you from experience life, your life, fully. And those are your attachments, your constant prayer. You want to talk about worship? How many people worship their iPhone, their car, their relationships, their house, their possessions? That is the world, the experience of suffering, of anxiety, of stress. And with Siddhartha, a prince with everything he could have at his disposal, was trying to impress upon the world that, great, have all those things, but don't stress about it. They're not important. What's important is your mindset, your perception that these things are all well and good, but they're not you. They're not essential for you. For your being, for your moment-to-moment existence. Be in those moments fully liberated, unstressed, unanxietied, free to feel the excitement of this experience rather than trying to glue it to everything. That's keeping you unhappy. That's creating stress. That's creating anxiety. Enjoy what there is to enjoy. And ponder that which isn't. But don't invest you into that. Invest in your liberation from that. And that's where the reward comes, the merit derived from perfect wisdom. Do you see? Perfect wisdom, a great lore. How far are we going to do? Shall we take on another stanza? It's only two statements. Oh, for me, two statements. Okay. This perfection of wisdom of the jhanas is a great lore. Appeasing dharmas, making for sorrow and ill in many a world of beings. So appeasing really meaning to quiet down those attachments, those ways of gluing our identity, our distinguishments to us. The saviors of the world in the past and in the future, and those now in the 10 directions, they have, by training in this lore, become the supreme physicians. Here we go again with these allusions, these poetics of how liberation, this perfection of wisdom, of knowing the Buddha mind, right? makes us physicians. Physicians in the sense that we're quelling the illness of what? The illness of samsara, the illness of attachments, the illness of stress, anxiety. Oh, wow. Modern world. Haven't we tried to do that with all sorts of drugs and medications? That's yet another attachment, though, so we've substituted one for another. The only way to truly liberate yourself from stress, suffering, misery, pain, blah, 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 is to shift your mind, to detach from those things, not annihilate them, not act as though they never happened. Yes, your mother died in the car crash. Yes, that's real. But it's not you. It's something to feel compassion for. It's something to feel love for. But it's not something that diminishes your life in any way. It's not something that makes you more about death than life. See, how does something influence your life? If it influences your life in a negative way so that you'd sink into suffering and misery, then you've missed it. You're now completely glued in Mara and stress and anxiety. You're not in your Buddha mind anymore. We're volatile beings. This can happen moment to moment, right? It's in those moments of great trauma that we usually have to work doubly hard because we're immersed in it, we feel it, that we save ourselves with our great physician and we start to understand with great focus the minimal things we require to be happy, to feel good about being human. I remember waking up after a surgery that I was convinced in my mind was going to end my life. And I woke up that next morning and looked around and the sun was brighter. The view from my room was of the Pacific Ocean. In a hospital, believe that. And I'm not telling stories here. This actually happened to me. And I looked around and I realized the position I was in the bed. It was a heavy-duty neck surgery. And I breathed in and I didn't feel all of that pain that I'd been crying and suffering through for years, especially for the last year and a half before the surgery. My arm was shaking like this. I was in a horrible state. And when I woke up out of surgery, it didn't matter that I had catheters and plugs and sensors and needles in me all over the place. I didn't even experience that at all. All I experienced was this super great relief. And I was just amazed. I was in a state, I'm telling you, of just complete amazement. And my only thought that kept going through my head, because I'm in samsara, what do I do now? And it didn't take very long for what do I do now to become, what do I need? Right there in samsara. Just that fast. But I had that moment of just being and go, and just, wow. Wow, I'm here. It made me cry. And I thought, now what do I do? Slipping into Mara, right? Like I have some kind of responsibility. And yet it was more of a, not like a job kind of thing, but like a, how do I participate in the world kind of thing? So still, a pretty high mental state, really. And all I could think of was, I would just like to have one person, one set of eyes that I could look into and say thank you. And really, really feel that level of thank you. That level of appreciation. I needed to see another human pair of eyes, another identity to share my wonder at being alive. And for me, later, I reflect on that moment and I think, you know, it's like a stubborn samsaric beings. We need major traumas in order to awaken to the true simplicity. I mean, super basic amazement of what it is to be alive. I didn't need breakfast. I didn't need to be walking around jogging on the beach. I didn't need anything. I just needed to experience my appreciation, albeit in samsara, I needed another. It was not even a full body, just a presence that I could go and share and say, this is amazing, is it not? Thank you for giving me the opportunity to express my deep, profound appreciation for just here. And ultimately, isn't that our Buddha wisdom? Isn't that our Bodhisattva path? We need each other. It's not a solipsistic practice. It's not a go up in the hills in a cave and become enlightened. It's not arhatship. It is, as Buddha said, to experience perfect, complete enlightenment is to do so as a bodhisattva, right? So that you can look in another person's eyes, another bodhisattva, or another person aspiring to the way. And when you get through chanting, if you have the fortune enough to chant with just one other person, look at them in the eye when you're done with your daimoku, when you're done with your gangyo. Look at each person that participates with you in the eye and see if you don't see that. That amazing appreciation. Don't say anything. Just look eye to eye and feel the Itai Doshin. Feel the many in body, but one in mind. Feel that Buddha-ness. If you do that, you don't need to listen to another word I say. You will understand. You will know what it is, Buddha. Let's continue. And also, those who course in the practice of pity and concern for the welfare of others, they, the wise, by having trained in this lore, this knowing of experience, therefore lore, because there's no physical attributes to it, will experience enlightenment. This is what I just said. That's amazing. I didn't know I was going to read that, okay? The wise, by having trained in this lore, will experience enlightenment. When you chant together, when you do gangyo together, look each other in the eye. You will experience Buddha. Those who have conditioned happiness and those who have unconditioned happiness, all their happiness should be known as having issued from this. Wow, what a line to end this talk on. Whether your happiness, because you have the perceived fortune in life, to have the fast car, the airplane, all the money you want, all the relationships you want, all that kind of happiness. And those of us who find that true happiness of looking each other in the eye after gangyo, that kind of happiness, they all come from that kind of happiness. They all come from Buddha. It's just that some people's happiness is conditioned and therefore ultimately stressful and anxiety filled. But that means samsara is enlightenment also. It's just not being experienced correctly. And again, this is why I remind you, the only place you can attain Buddhahood is in this samsaric life. It doesn't exist anywhere else. Stop looking. It's in your mind, in your perception, in your ability. It is what you are built to do. From Buddha into samsara to discover again Buddha with this amazing experience. Here's a fridge note. Just invented something. Yikes. Okay. Thank you so much for being here. This seems to be my time slot. I hope these work for you. And again, please use the comments. Let me know what you think. A lot of you do comment, and you express your happiness with the reward of these discussions, and that fills me with gratitude that I am doing what I set out to do, and that is to encourage you and to support your practice. That's all that matters to me. But because that's what matters to me, your feedback on things where you think I might be lacking in my discussions, or things that you're seeming to not gel on, or things that would help you encourage your practice more. Let me know. I want to know that. That's the benefit of Sangha. Is we help one another. So thank you to those of you who use those of you who comment, who send me emails, who let me know what's going on with your practice and your life. Deep, deep gratitude for that. Those of you who participate by listening and reading those comments and find support from that, brilliant. That's great too. I appreciate all of you. My patrons, you guys are amazing. The whole YouTube drivel goes along with that. You know, like, subscribe, share. Share is a way to Bodhisattva, right? And with all of that, blah, 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 I'll let you go. I would do this all day. I don't know how much benefit there would be to that. But yeah, this practice is my life. Without it, I'm not interested. So I'm not sure what that means. A moment of sharing there. But I will see you in the next one, guaranteed. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Have a great one. Bye for now.